Why wait until Friday to start your weekend?
Go ahead, start right now.
You're thirsty now, and 93.7 The Ticket is here to help you stock up.
Just in time for the weekend when I like to hit the clubs.
Time to broaden your horizons and try some new wine and beer. It's Thirsty Thursday with Kevin Meyer from Meyer's Cork and Bottle.
Oh, yeah.
Solid 8.5. Solid 8.5. That one's always perfect.
Oh, cold, crisp, refreshing. Found only here at 93.7 TicketFM.com. It is Thirsty Thursday with Kevin Meyer from Meyer's Cork and Bottle. Uncle Kev, a happy Thursday to you and yours. How are you?
What's happening, nephews? We got little Nikki in the building. I'm super excited about this. And Austin, of course, you always...
you're here too.
Uncle Kev, I paid you a visit a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
And so I tried...
This is different than the other visit they paid me. Okay, all right.
Easy.
Picking up.
Remind what I got. Do you remember off the top of your head?
Oh,
this would be so impressive. It was a peanut butter stout.
Oh, that's right.
And it was exceptional.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
Very good. Very good. Well, we're like it or not, we're in the holidays,
mm-hmm.
right? So 2 weeks to Thanksgiving. Next week is Beaujolais Nouveau Day. That's always a very exciting time in the wine business. And so we're just going to. I've said this before on the air, but Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday, and it's because basically there's no expectations to spend a whole bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfectly acceptable to eat too much and then go take a nap, and no one's giving you the business. There's lots and lots of football on TV. There's more wine consumed on Thanksgiving Day than any other day in this country. And so, I mean, what's not to love about Thanksgiving?
Nothing. There's nothing not to love about
that's
Thanksgiving.
That's why it's my favorite.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. I will say, Nick, I do have to give you some grief right before we went on air.
Yes.
You did mess with your palate a little bit. Is that your energy stinger?
It was not. So I make my own version of the energy stinger, but it's not important. But yes, it's strawberry watermelon flavor. And I did take, I finished my drink as soon as we got back on air for a moment.
The definitely is not going to set this up very well. So take a sip. And then just start over and then take another sip. We're doing the wine first because I also don't think the beer is going to set up this wine very well.
Talk us through the wine.
Well, we're in a bye week. And so basically these are, we're going to go wines that go well with Thanksgiving dinner. And this is, even though it's an American holiday, this is actually a French wine, and it's called Brot Esprit Côte du Rhône. And where Côte du Rhône is the southeastern part of France. They can use up to 13 different grape types to make this wine from.
I thought there were just three.
There's the big three.
Uh-huh.
You know, so
green, red, and purple.
We're not talking about, you know, LeBron and D Wade and Chris Bosh. We're talking about a different big three.
Ray Allen.
The GSM blend or the Grenache Syrah Mourvèdre. And in that scenario, I think LeBron would be the Syrah. The let's see, I would probably have to put D Wade the Grenache, and then I already forgot
Chris Bosh.
I give him the Mourvèdre. So
GSM. Are you saying GSM is Dwayne Wade's team, not LeBron's team?
Well, the thing is it's not necessarily in that order, and so the reason I put it that way is that the Grenache is a little lighter on its feet. It's a little brighter. It's sort of organizing the show.
Sure.
The Syrah has a peppery taste. It's a little more full bodied, and it's going to back you down into the paint. The Mourvèdre is actually a very thick skinned grape, but they don't use as much of it, but it's there to round everything out, provide a complimentary affect to the entire team of flavors. And so, therefore, when you blend those together, you get a wine that is among the world's most versatile. It goes well with everything. And the great thing about Thanksgiving, you've got so many different things hitting the table. You've got your turkey, you've got your stuffing, you've got your potatoes, you've got your gravy, your rolls. I mean, and I love a homemade cranberry sauce, and I know I'm in the minority about cranberry sauce, but mine is legit. So anyway, that's where we're at.
I really like this. Walk us through what is going on at the Meyer Thanksgiving buffet. What's on the table? What are you making today or this year?
With the bird, I go 2-day brine.
Okay.
Okay. Then so you pull it out of the brine, you pat it dry. Then I rub the entire thing down, both cavities and the exterior, with olive oil, and then give it a nice, healthy coating of dry rub. And that's my own secret recipe on the dry rub.
Ooh. Mm.
Not found at Meyer's Cork and Bottle.
Not found at Meyer's Cork and Bottle. In all honesty, I take 3 or 4 different dry rubs and I place them together and I call it mine. So
it's okay. It's yours. It's yours.
And then I'll take chopped celery, chopped apples, chopped carrots, and chopped onion, and stuff the cavities with that. Then you take an orange and you chop it in half, and that's your cap on both the top and the bottom, right? Then you pin it closed, and then it goes on the Traeger for, I would say, gosh, it's probably going to be a good three, four hours. Mm-hmm. And then I'll pull it, put it in the bag with a little bit of flour just to keep it from sticking, and then finish it off in the oven. What that does, that collects all the juice. It crisps the skin. And then when it's ready, you just let it sit for a good half hour before you carve it. And then I'll collect all that juice in the bottom. I'll baste the carved meat with it. Also puts a fair amount in the gravy, depending on how much juice we've got. And that's my take on the bird.
Do you have any Thanksgiving failure stories?
I actually had a tray with the full bird on it that was like overflowing with juice I spilled that all over myself and all over the floor, but that's about the only thing I could remember. Maybe there was a time I drank too much, but you know, that's okay.
Yeah.
That'll happen. Okay. We need the rest of the spread though. Obviously your homemade cranberry sauce, which does sound incredible to your credit, but
so you take fresh whole cranberries and you boil them in a Belgian raspberry beer. Mm. And then you add
sold at Meyer's Cork and Bottle.
Sold at Meyer's Cork and Bottle. It's called a framboise. And then you add some sugar and some grated orange zest, and you just let that boil until those cranberries are soft, and then it naturally gelatinizes all by itself. So that's my cranberry sauce. And then if you mash potatoes,
plain Jane mashed potatoes.
No. These are seasoned up. Okay. We've got lots of garlic salt in there, mm-hmm. perhaps some herbs, lots of salt and pepper. And then, of course, lots of butter, and then homemade mushroom gravy. Ooh. And that's about what I do. Now,
I'm glad you said the gravy. My wife does not go for gravy on her mashed potatoes.
Ooh.
Oh, I pour the gravy over everything.
That was insane. Yeah, you smother it.
Yeah, heck yeah. And then sometimes you use your roll as like your
sops it up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's almost like your fork or your spoon. But
plain like regular white roll. Are we doing like sweet roll? What's the
either
roll?
Or I'm kind of more of a white roll. I don't really like the sweet rolls per se, but I'm not against it. I'll eat it.
How do you feel about people and family? We'll get back to the alcohol in a second. All right. How do you feel about people that don't do traditional turkey dinners? Do you have any strong feelings? Are you one of those people that are like, no, it's Thanksgiving, you have to do this type of food?
I'm always a you do you, I'll do me.
Thank you.
You know,
thank you.
I feel like they're missing out, but if it's not something that they prefer, you know, you have every right to eat what you feel is best.
Because approximately how many people are going to be at your shindig?
This
should
be a small one.
Okay.
We're only doing about an 11-pound turkey, although we're doing round one this Sunday. We're doing a Friendsgiving.
Whoa.
At the house. So we're actually doing it twice. And then, but the actual Thanksgiving is only going to be about 6 or 8 of us.
Okay.
There we go.
Gotcha. Because okay. I got yelled at on the text line years ago because I let the people know that we did a taco bar a couple of years ago at my family's Thanksgiving because there's like 35 of us. There's like 35 of us. So it's like, hey, everybody bring a crock pot full of meat and all the stuff for tacos and you'll be good to go. But then I got, you know,
interesting.
I got absolutely destroyed on the text line.
Call it a mochas gracias.
I did. We just called it Thanksgiving and spending time with family.
There we go. Thank you. Okay. Last thing then on the Thanksgiving, the dessert situation.
Yes.
What do you do?
Oh, I'm a big pie guy. Mm. I love a good
next Twitter handle when this one gets stolen by the Russians.
could be big pie guy. My mom makes the most delicious homemade pecan pie. I like pumpkin. I don't love pumpkin.
Yeah.
a really good made from scratch cherry pie is always kind of one of my favorites. My daughter makes a hellacious blueberry lemon.
Ooh.
And okay. So, yeah. Or even like a French silk, like a chocolate.
Oh, great pie. All yes. right. On the wine, it can pair well with anything. Yeah. Yes. It was very, this is going to be really bad. I mean, really amateur of me to say, real neutral. Like it wasn't super harsh. It didn't have a ton of that bitter wine flavor. It wasn't dry, but it also wasn't too sweet. It was very neutral right in the middle.
And I think that's part of what makes it so versatile is that there isn't anything about it that just overwhelms you. It just tastes good. It feels good on the palate. Smooth. You do get those. Yeah, it's a very smooth style. You get a little bit of the bright cherry from the Grenache. You get a little bit of the peppery component from the Syrah, and then a little bit of oomph from the Mourvèdre.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
What's also interesting is that the French will actually blend in like small percentages of white grape in the wine. So, you know, like 1% of either the most prolific grapes are called Marsan and Roussan, but they also do a little bit of a grape called Viognier. And so it's just a unique wine. They bring a lot to the table in terms of value. So in the Rhone wines, you're not paying so much for the history and the prestige of where it comes from. You're paying for more or what's in the bottle. So you can find a good Cote de Rhone for $20 and it's going to do well with anything that you're serving. So
that's going to punch above its weight class.
Indeed.
That's awesome. Kevin Meyer, Meyer's Cork and Bottle, 13th and South Inn with us here at Fort Thirsty Thursday. We're moving on to the beer. What are we working with here, Kevin?
So we're going to dive straight into the holiday beer. So this is called Sleigh Queen, which play on words, S-L-E-I-G-H. And this is from Crooked Stave Brewing. And this is a holiday ale spiced with cinnamon and nutmeg.
That's cinnamon.
Yep. And it's just, it should taste like a holiday.
You can like a holiday, like, or Christmas, or like Christmas. Easter holiday.
Yeah. The winter holiday, okay. Christmas.
Okay. The cinnamon punches you. I mean, in a good way. And right off the bat, just by smelling it.
Oh, you know, it'd be really good with that.
Oh, interesting.
You like the molasses cookies?
I was just going to say, I was going to say some vanilla ice cream.
Yeah, you could do that too. Yeah.
Just vanilla ice cream.
But those molasses cookies where you got a little bit of the crunchy sugar on top and they're a little bit gooey.
Yes.
Yeah.
The pieces of sugar go really well with
they
this.
They crunch a little bit when you take a bite.
Yeah. Okay. Now we're talking.
How about the imagery by three radio guys?
This is the fireball of beers. Not quite to like the same level of cinnamon punch, but you get it enough. Like, okay, yeah, there's a little bit there. The nutmeg comes through.
I was gonna say,
I love your pairing ideas. Sign me up.
Yeah, I'm not a big nutmeg guy, but this tastes well. Like, so great people at the mill. Like, the nutmeg just isn't for me. Like on coffee drinks and stuff.
Fair,
but it doesn't overpower you because you get the cinnamon right off the bat to start. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times maybe nutmeg, if there's too much of it, can overpower everything else. This is really, really good. I like this a lot.
The nice thing about it is that it still tastes like a beer. It's not sweet.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you get the baking spice flavors without the sugariness. And so it still tastes like a beer. And I mean, it tastes like Christmas. It literally tastes like Christmas.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned it, does have the beer flavor on the back end. Like after you swallow it, you can still taste the beer flavor of it.
It's interesting you say that, because actually what's sticking with me is more that baking spice component. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because I'm looking out for it, but I got more of the beer up front. And then as I let it sit, that's when I still get some of that cinnamon and nutmeg just kind of hanging around.
That's it 180 does. For me. What would you say? I'm deciding folk.
I'm more in Austin school of thought here. Well, I'm those baking spices, that's what we refer to in the wine world as the finish.
Yes.
And those are the lingering flavors that are left in your mouth after you've consumed it. And you definitely get a pronounced cinnamon nutmeg finish, maybe even a little bit of clove in there as well. But
Sure.
Delicious and fun, and kind of embracing the holidays. And, you know, gosh, time has just gone so fast. I can't believe 2025 is like, I mean, we're halfway through fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we got 6 weeks left. And I'm like, holy moly, how is that even possible? So
49 days left of 2025, Uncle Kev.
That's crazy.
You know what?
Does Nebraska score 49 more points in the regular season?
I'm going to say yes.
I will go on the other side of that and say no.
If Nebraska scores 49 points, I think they're 2-0.
I do too. Uncle Kev, you know what I thought of when I tried this beer?
What?
I thought of when you are forced as a family activity to make a gingerbread house.
Okay.
This is what you drink to get you through the gingerbread house making process.
It does have a little bit of gingerbread sort of taste. So, like,
that's very specific. I know.
Right, right. My problem is I would always eat most of my, building materials, shall you say.
I don't know. You can never be too safe though with the pre-made gingerbread house stuff that you can buy from like Walmart and everything. You don't know how long those candies have been sitting.
A lot of
box.
Times you can tell. It's like if it tastes like a button that fell off your shirt, probably shouldn't eat that. But
you only have a short window to eat that stuff anyways. Because once you get it put together and it sits out, like you gotta get it gone like day or two.
I don't think I've ever consumed a gingerbread house after I've made it.
No. I always consume it while I'm making it, and then I get about halfway through construction before I basically make myself sick on a sugar high. So it takes a lot of patience that I no longer possess.
But you did possess it at one point.
I did. I was actually an architecture major for my first 2 years in college. And so I had to build a ton of models from scratch. And
were you like the spaghetti and marshmallows towers
guy? No. This was legit. Like, I mean, we're talking... fundamental structural art basically is what it was. And I got pretty good at it, but then I got burnt out as well. So then I had to go over to the J school.
Hey, nothing wrong with the J school.
Hey, absolutely.
Do you ever drive downtown and, or just in a city and go, man, what could have been?
A little bit.
I mean, you got a great career. I mean, everything's great right now. Shout out to Myers.
I enjoy what I do. It's certainly, you know, every job has its pluses and minuses, but, you know, what you can actually build and what you can creatively imagine are usually don't meet, unless you've got some miracle client with unlimited funds. And so you have to exercise your creative muscle in smaller doses, and go with what's more practical. And so that part of it is, you know, is probably would be the challenge.
Yeah,
I guess so. But no, I'm glad I didn't go to school for 10 more years. I can tell you that. So that was the big reason why.
Well, tell us what's coming up. What's going on at the shop right now? You got any good sales? Anything that we need to know about?
Absolutely. So Turkey Day sale starts next Wednesday. Beaujolais Nouveau arrives on Thursday. That is always the third Thursday of November or the week before Thanksgiving, and is a big time in the wine world. I'm going to bring it in next Thursday, and we'll talk all about Beaujolais Nouveau and the history and how it got started and why it works with your Thanksgiving meal. But like I said before, there's more wine consumed on Thanksgiving Day in this country than any other day of the year, and the best place to get it is at Meyer's Cork and Bottle. And we're going to have 7,500 different wines on sale beginning Wednesday. And so it'll be a great time to stop in, stock up, and come see your old Uncle Kev.
You know where to find me on Wednesday afternoon. Uncle Kev, question for those that might want to gift wines. How is there a way to ship wines, like for out-of-state family? What's the way to go about that if they're interested in coming down to Myers and then shipping it away?
Unfortunately, individuals cannot ship themselves.
Gotcha.
However, we are licensed, have the proper shipping license to do so, and can help people out with that.
There
it is. This is America.
This is America, but it's a regulated industry, so you know there are some rules.
What rapper sang the song "This Is America"? Do you know Austin?
Wasn't that Kendrick?
It might have been Kendrick. Kendrick said, "This is America." What are these running for, Uncle Kev?
So the Esprit Cote de Rhone.
It was Kendrick. No, actually, it's Donald Glover. Charles Gambino. My bad.
those are $20, and then $22, and then the Crooked Stave Slave Queen. I want to say go for about $350 a can.
Oh, geez, not
and
bad.
And we have
at all.
Them in four packs.
Not bad at all. So $20 for a really good wine.
$22.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry.
But there are other Cote d'Aron that we have that are only $20.
Yeah. Those are really good.
And for $7, you can get through building a gingerbread house.
Indeed.
You need more than one. So
that's right.
Kevin Meyer, it's a stupid
multi-hour process.
Appreciate you as always, Kev.
Thanks, gentlemen.
We'll go to break. More of Old School on the other side.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Big thanks, Kevin Meyer, Meyer's Cork and Bottle, for swinging by, talking with us here on Thirsty Thursday. As always, Austin Norman and Nick Sainer back with you here, 402-464-5685. If you want to be a part of the conversation, you can. Other important number for you to know belongs to Heartland of Nebraska Windows. Give them a call today for more information at 402-430-3852, or you can visit them online at heartlandofnebraskawindows.com. You can learn about their free estimates, full window replacements, all vinyl triple pane windows, and a lifetime warranty on everything. They are still keeping their prices affordable, locally family-owned, with their own team of installers. Great people down there at Heartland of Nebraska Windows. Shout out Gary and the crew down there in Hallam.
Gary's hanging out. I just got off the phone with Gary 2 days ago. He's hanging out in Florida. He answered the phone. He's like, hey, what's up, Nick? And I go, hey. I was like, Gary, what are you up to? And he goes, I'm sitting on the beach in Florida right now. And I said, oh, well, when are you back in town? And he goes, well, next week we go down to the Keys. And I was like, well, what's going on? Heartland Nebraska Windows, great people.
Really appreciate him. Big shout out to the folks at Heartland of Nebraska Windows. Got a bit of a window into the mindset of some Major League Baseball general managers. It's not the official winter meetings. It is Major League Baseball's general manager meetings. Nick, some deals maybe not getting ironed out this week, but certainly being talked about. Lots to get to. On the Royals front, they are pursuing an upgrade at second base and probably a starting outfielder. It will come at the expense of some starting pitching for them. But let's jump into first, Pete Alonso.
Yeah.
Career Met. Has been there his whole career after a successful career, obviously, in college at the University of Florida. Mets let him hit free agency.
Yeah.
A guy that has been a cornerstone, a pillar, a constant, really good for them, hasn't really had a down year. Maybe some years he's been closer to average, but hasn't ever really been bad for the Mets. They said, nope, you know what? We can't come to a deal with you. We'll make you an offer in free agency, but we'll go from there. Man, I think about a team across the city. They could use a first baseman, a left-handed hitting first baseman to utilize that short porch. Mm-hmm. I think there is a team in Boston that could use a first baseman. Pete Alonso better have a pretty decent market. He's really a bat-only first baseman, but that's pretty good. And I'm really curious to see what the market looks like for a guy like the Polar Bear.
You're right. I think and we're not talking Nash Hutmaker, when we're Polar Bear, I think it's interesting because this is a guy that three of the last 4 years, he's had over 100 RBIs in a season as well. And so it's a lot to get to, right? I think this is going to be an interesting free agency because I think in addition to Pete Alonso's market, corner outfielders, and they've said at the winter meetings that outfield depth is going to be something that a lot of organizations are going to be looking for and paying high price for them. Mm-hmm. And so I bring that into the conversation to say there's a lot of teams that have established first basemen that can play every day that might have some outfielders to give away, and you might be able to make a swap and benefit both people and both sides. And I just think that with, obviously not with Pete Alonso, but with Pete Alonso specifically with the free agency stuff, correct me if I'm wrong, he re-signed with them a few years ago, or he did a player option a few years ago.
He got that little extension that essentially just bought out his arbitration.
That's what it was. And so there was commitment, though. There was re-upped and verified commitment from both sides. And then now they don't go forward with him. I think this is more of a New York Mets issue. Like, consistently, they go out and they're big players in free agency for a lot of notable faces. Mm-hmm. And Pete Alonso's been a lifelong Met, obviously. But
rookie of the year 2019, led baseball in homers with 53 of them, seventh in the MVP, finished top 10 in MVP twice already. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. The fewest games he's played in a full season,
bingo,
152. Incredibly durable. Will show up every day. Now, not a hugely physical demanding position at first base.
No.
But that's a star, maybe not superstar, but certainly a star that delivers for you night in, night out.
And even if he doesn't want to go forward with first base, as he's now, what is it? This will be his eighth year.
31.
Yeah, his eighth year, his age 31 season. I mean, you can talk about how just be a DH. Yeah. He's a bat. That's what you're bringing him. And that's also the name of the game now, right? Yeah. We know it, right? The name of the game now is in the regular season home runs. I think this postseason, though, showed that it's still a pitcher's ball game. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that. I see the value of bullpen help really show up in the postseason.
Let's get to this from our friend Dan from Canopy Street Market. Vinny Pasquantino is better. Fits Kansas City like a glove. Vinny Pasquantino is probably a better defender than Pete Alonso, but Pete Alonso is a better bat. Because you have to factor in the whole season. Vinny's a good hitter. Vinny is still entering his prime, but Pete Alonso's OPS plus is 147, 122, 133, 146, 123, 122, 144. That's absolutely incredible. I got to get Vinny's numbers pulled up, but I feel very confident off the top of my head that Vinny does not have a season like Pete Alonso's had two or three already. And I love the guy. I love the Pasquatch. I mean, he's so great for the clubhouse.
Bingo.
I don't think the Royals would imagine trading a guy like Vinny Pasquantino unless they absolutely had to. But I did see a proposed trade. If the Red Sox want to spend their money on bringing Alex Bregman back or pursuing Bo Bichette in the division to stick at second base if Christian Campbell's not ready, would the Red Sox trade from their outfield depth Jaron Duran to the Royals in exchange for Vinny Pasquantino?
It's fascinating. I think that also you can't use, okay, if we're talking about strictly Vinny and Pete Alonso, you can't use the ballpark excuse, right? Because both ballparks are not friendly to hitters.
To power hitters.
To power hitters, that is. I wonder how much of that goes into these free agent decisions, Austin. Mm-hmm. The ballpark you play in.
Yeah.
Because I remember when the Cubs were working with Cody Bellinger, and whether or not there was a chance that Cody Bellinger was going to be a Cub, part of it, and whether or not he'd re-sign. Same story goes for Kyle Tucker this year, right? Like, this has now been 2 years in a row where there's been an outfielder, specifically an outfielder, go with the Chicago Cubs. He's been capable of hitting home runs and has had a down year, down year in the home run department. I wonder if now, if you're another free agent, you look at that and go, okay, in the ballpark that we're playing in, you're playing in it, what, 81 games of the year, 81 times of the year. And so, like, it is notable. I also wonder how much they actually take that into account.
I think you'd be dumb not to. You can't make it everything, because at some point you got to bet on your talent. Oh, I'm good enough to make it work. I'll find a way to do
it. The ego comes in.
Right.
Honestly, it's
but
the same way.
But you also can't
ignore
the data.
You can't ignore the data, especially with how analytical baseball's become. But I feel like also it's some sort of the same conversation we talk about with college football coaches, or just head coaches in general. Why would you leave that place to go to this place? Well, it's because they don't ever feel like they'll fail. They don't think they'll ever fail. The reason that they're in the spot that they are of potentially moving to a quote-unquote better job or a higher-paying job is because they've had success at their current stop. They never think that they're going to have failure or anything but success at their next stop. So I feel like with baseball, yes, you have to have that ego mentality at times, but you also, with it being such an analytically and database sport, you have to trust the analytics more so than maybe just your ego at times.
Another guy I want your opinion on, a guy that was at one point near and dear to your heart.
Yeah.
Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah.
Phillies did not come to an agreement with him. Schwarbs will be entering his age 33 season 1 year after playing almost primarily designated hitter, featuring in left field once or twice, played all 162 games, 56 homers, led the National League, 132 RBI, led all of baseball, OPS plus of 150. His career OPS plus is 127. Nick, is there any chance that the Cincinnati kid goes home and helps boost the Reds lineup? Or do you think it's more likely than not that he sticks around in Philly?
I think it's more likely that he has a reuniting celebration with the Boston Red Sox.
Ooh, interesting.
I don't know. I think you need somebody that I've been reading that they're thinking projected contract for him is around the 4 year, $130 million mark.
Which would take him through age 36 and a half or 37.
Which is essentially his last spot. I think I think this is where we talk about the hitter friendly ballpark. A situation to where he's not going to be asked to play defense. It's going to be designated hitter all 162 games, if not a few less. I just think that Boston's kind of set up that way. And just the reuniting of those two pieces there. I could also see him go back to Chicago. Like, that's not even just for me. Chicago, believe it or not, in a ballpark that's not necessarily friendly to hitters, especially with the wind more times than not blowing in. There was some insane statistic that the large portion of their runs last year came, and it was like heavily tilted to the home runs. It came off the home run ball. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of the things that the Cubs did best last year was hit the home run ball. And so if you're looking at, okay, how can you get better? How can you get better? that's funny if you're watching on the stream. How can you get better? Well, it's go get power home run guys, power hitting guys. And Kyle Schwarber's the guy that hit almost 60 home runs last year. Mm-hmm. It is, and that is well within the Cubs' ability to pay. I mean, mm-hmm. there are a lot of teams that can afford the $130 million.
Would you rather see Kyle Tucker or Kyle Schwarber?
Schwarber.
Back with the Cubs.
Schwarber in a heartbeat.
Really?
Yeah, I would.
Even going into age 33?
Yeah, I would. Because at 32, he hit 56 home runs and 132 RBI.
Ooh.
And the Cubs, here's why I say that. The Cubs are also incredibly deep with outfield talent. I led off this conversation.
Sure. Cubs said something similar.
I was saying this about the Cubs, or I was saying this about the outfield talent and how it's a very polarizing trade mm-hmm. piece for a lot of organizations this year. I would imagine that the Cubs are going to be heavy players with dealing. I mean, they have so many, whether it's Owen Casey, whether it's Ian Happ, won another gold glove. Who knows if that's going to be a possibility of a trade piece there. Ian Happ's going to be in the hall of pretty good. Like, that's just where he's at.
Yeah.
He's won 4 straight gold gloves, and he's, I mean, just fine batting wise, but man, his defense is great. They're going to re-sign PCA. They're going to effort to re-sign PCA. Pete Crow Armstrong there. You got to find a corner outfielder. I mean, Seiya Suzuki had a great year last year going into what's about to be a contract year, I believe, if I remember his contract correctly. And then down in the minors, you have Owen Casey, who's one of their top prospects. You have Kevin Alcantara, who's one of their top prospects. There's a lot of outfield depth in that Cubs organization. When you talk about a team like that, that has a need for pitching, has a need for starters, has a need for bullpen guys. The Cubs are not going to be players in offseason for bullpen guys. They just don't overspend for bullpen pieces. Mm-hmm. They always just do a, hey, Johnny Holstaff type of thing with the relief, you know, people. And so if they can sign a Dylan Cease, if they can get a piece, I want to bring a player by you on the spot.
Okay.
I think it was Bob Nightingale brought up that the Padres are thinking about making Fernando Tatis available. Thoughts on if Fernando Tatis Jr. is available for the San Diego Padres?
I mean,
is he attractive?
That's a guy who last year, OPS plus of 125
mm-hmm.
across, what would that be? I mean, 6 WAR essentially in what ended up being 155 games. I mean, it's hard to say that it's not an attractive piece. 154, 156, 166 OPS pluses. Year off with a PED suspension,
mm-hmm.
110, 130, 125. I think that if Fernando Tatis Jr.
He got the contract.
He got the contract. He's already locked up.
Yeah.
I think
for a long time. For probably the rest of his career.
I'm going to say Fernando Tatis Jr. is in that tier that's below, like, your Bobby Witt Jr., Julio Rodriguez tier.
Okay.
Like, I think those guys are a step better right now. Okay. And now Tatis had an incredible rookie year, finishing third in voting. He's good. I don't know if he's elite.
Okay.
I don't know if he's great.
I mean, here's what's crazy. I mean, exceptional contract that he signed, by the way, when you break it down. I mean, Austin, I remember
who traded him away.
Ooh, I do not.
The White Sox.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
I forgot. I did not know that.
Tatis, Luis Robert, and Eloy Jimenez.
That's right. That's right. And who was the guy that they... Eloy came... Was Eloy the one that the Cubs traded to them? Or no.
Yohan Moncada
was traded from the Cubs.
Jose Abreu at that point, too.
Yeah, man.
Maybe I'm underrating Tatis now that I look at his stack.
Well, here's what I would say. You're getting so next year, if they do elect to get him, you're essentially getting somebody for, he has a full no trade clause through 2028. Now, granted, he can waive those, right? Here's what's funny. How about this contract set up for Fernando Tatis? So, Austin, he has a full no trade clause through 2028, a 10 team no trade clause, no trade list from 29 to 2034. And then the longest contract in MLB history, highest average salary for a shortstop at the time of signing as well. He only made $20 million last year.
Because there's like 13 for 330 when he signed.
So it was 14 for 340.
Okay.
So
I'm a scrub.
Get better. Next year, he makes $20 million again. Then it goes up. It's like the Matt Rhule contract. $25 million for 2027, $25 million for 2028. And then every year from 2029 to 2034, he makes $36.7 million a year.
Woo!
He gets an $11 million bump from 2028 to 2029.
So 2028...
You're talking about back end, backloaded.
They'll be like entering age 30. 29 and 30.
Yeah, in 2029, he'll be 30 years old.
Yeah.
And he's... Prime. You're talking about at his age 34 season, he's making 36.7. At his age 35 season, he's making 36.7. He feels like the next Nolan Arenado. Where at some point, maybe in like 2030, they'll dump his contract.
Could be.
And he'll be fine. Nolan Arenado's fine.
Yeah.
Not the premier third baseman we viewed him as 3 years ago.
Right.
Or would Anthony Rendon be a better comparison?
No, he'll play more than Rendon.
That's what I thought so too.
Derek will like Carlos Beltran? But I think Tatis moved out of a premium defensive position
that
too
is
early.
True. I 100% agree. And that's what I worry about Ellie De La Cruz.
Ellie
is...
What an enigma.
Ellie De La Cruz with the Cincinnati Reds. And it's tough for me to talk about him in this way because he's an interdivision rival with the Cincinnati Reds. I feel like they've dramatically mishandled and mismanaged Ellie De La Cruz's career.
I think Ellie De La Cruz is more on the Reds, but I think O'Neill Cruz with the Pirates is more on him.
Oh, great. Yes. Bam. Great conversation. This is awesome. This is great.
Let's go to break. Let's pick it up there. Speaking of the Pirates.
This is funny. Fernando Tatis forfeited $2.5 million in his PED policy suspension.
Oh, poor guy.
I mean, 2.5.
Where's he going to make that up?
Yeah. Jeez Louise.
Paul Skeen, Cy Young winner. Tarik Skubal, Cy Young winner. Let's talk about that wrapping up Hour 2 of Old School.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
We're wrapping up our baseball conversation here on Old School. Austin Orman and Nick Sainert with you. You can be a part of the conversation as well. 402-464-5685. Final segment of our 4 o'clock hour, as always, brought to you by the great folks over at Love Volleyball Nebraska. To renew your season tickets or secure them for the first time or to become a League One volleyball member, visit lovb.com. Their season starts in January, I believe you say in our commercial, right, Nick?
That is correct. Looking forward to it.
Stay tuned. Love Volleyball.
Stay tuned.
Nebraska. That's the radio thing, right? Stay tuned. More ahead.
Yeah.
So shout out the fine folks over at Love Volleyball Nebraska. MLB award season underway. Nick Kurtz, American League Rookie of the Year. Cade Horton barely gets edged out on the National League side. Heck of a year for him, but the whole rib issue probably came back to bite him. Yeah. American League Cy Young. Tarik Skubal has now had two seasons where he's made 30 more starts with a sub-250 ERA, sub-1 whip, a 6 or higher walk to strikeout ratio, and has won the Cy Young. Okay, he's the only two seasons in Major League Baseball history that he's done that. The flip side of that is Paul Skeens, just the 8th pitcher in Major League Baseball history to win both the Rookie of the Year and the Cy Young. Don Newcomb, Tom Seaver, Rick Sutcliffe, Fernando Mania, Dwight Gooden, Justin Verlander, and Jacob deGrom, his company there. Skeens and Skubal, of course, start the All-Star game and win the Cy Young, both of them in the same year. First time that that has happened since 2001. Randy Johnson and Roger Clemens. And yet, Nick, I find myself wildly disappointed.
Uh-oh.
In that the conversation, the night that Paul Skeens wins the Cy Young is, rumor says Paul Skeens wants to go to the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me? Why do we have to do this all the time? He probably ends up there. But the dude just won his first Cy Young. The dude is the pitching version of Mike Trout right now. Yeah. And it has to be, oh, how fast can we get him out of there? And I get it. Pittsburgh is a dumpster fire in the most charitable sense. I want him someplace where he can be successful and dominate. But the night he wins the Cy Young, the third Pirate ever, why does that have to leak then?
I did appreciate his response because he was asked about it last night. And his response was just something, I mean, very, very cliche, very, I want to be a part. You know, a lot of people count us out. A lot of people don't think the Pirates can win some ball games and I want to be a part of the group. And I think it's very diplomatic, right, of Paul Skenes to do that. He definitely handles, you can see him growing into his own as well. Little things like the celebration, right? There was no emotion last year when he won the Rookie of the Year award. A little bit more emotion this year when he wins the Cy Young. But ultimately, I was actually very happy that it was a unanimous decision that Paul Skenes was the NL Cy Young. I don't think we maybe recognize, and I just want to bring it to the air space, of how difficult it could be to win the Cy Young Award on a team like the Pittsburgh Pirates that fired their head coach, what was it, 22 games into the season or something like that? And the Pittsburgh Pirates this year, this is a team that won 71 games. So they weren't horrific, I should say, but they were not good. They weren't anywhere close.
They're the Pirates.
They weren't anywhere close to you know, playoff contention. And yet they have the best pitcher in baseball, and it was voted on unanimously. I think that really shows. He had a 10-10 record. He had a sub-2 ERA, and he had a 10-10 record. I don't think we really processed that right now, and so that's why I just wanted to bring it to the air, because that is remarkable. You're giving up less than 2 runs per 9 innings, and you have 10 losses. Your offense cannot score more than 2 runs. That you cannot score more than 2 runs a game. When you're starting, you get no help. I was happy to see that they gave it to him and it was unanimous, because I felt like it was deserved.
In the span of about 900 days, give or take, Paul Skenes has gone from playing in college, winning most outstanding player of the Men's College World Series, to National Pitcher of the Year, to Dick Houser winner, to number one pick, Rookie of the Year, back-to-back All-Star Game starter, and now unanimous Cy Young. Nick, the record is 7 Cy Youngs for Roger Clemens. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, given that, you know, this is Cy Young number one for Paul Skenes. I just hope that he's the pitching version of Mike Trout and that he starts his career this fast and makes an impact, the lasting one on the sport of baseball. But I hope he's able to avoid the injury issues and wear and tear and drama that's followed Mike Trout in Los Angeles. Mike Trout will still be like a top 3 baseball player of all time in terms of my favorites. He was tracking to be an Inner Circle Hall of Famer. Paul Skenes certainly on that track right now. I know he's in your division for who knows what we'll see, but just for the game of baseball, keep this dude healthy. Keep him away from drama. Get him to October, please.
It is so funny. He had a 7.7 WAR this year. Last year,
insane.
Over his career, he's had a 13.5 WAR, wins above replacement. That's crazy to think about.
It's hard for pitchers to put up WAR like that.
Yeah, it is.
Taking the ball once every fifth day.
It's wild. I mean, 216 strikeouts this season and 187 innings pitch, almost 187 and 2/3, a 1.97 earned run average, 32 starts. I think a lot of it, right? Baseball name of the game, it's heat, velocity, right? Yeah. He does it really well.
He
throws it very well. And he has
a signature pitch in the splinker.
He does. I think I would love to look up like Paul Skenes, like his analytics.
As you do that, let me talk about WAR while you find the Skenes numbers. So Paul Hembekides, who's with ESPN and the Pat McAfee show as well, was doing pitcher WAR in the American League. Fangraphs had a Tarek Skubal at a 0.8 wins above replacement more than Garrett Crochet.
Yeah.
Baseball Reference had him just 0.2 of a win ahead of Crochet. Baseball Prospectus WAR, Garrett Crochet beat Tarek Skubal by a win and a 0.1.
Oh.
7 WAR to 5.9, because Baseball Prospectus essentially factors in opponent quality.
Wow.
Against top 10 lineups, Garrett Crochet, 83 innings, a 2.4 ERA and a 6.11 OPS against. Tarek Skubal against top 10 lineups, 61 innings pitched, a 3.7 ERA and a 7.10 OPS. But this is where we get into award season. So much of it is the vibe.
100%.
Think about how good the Tigers were, best record in the AL for a while. Yeah. Scooble won it last year. Clearly dominant. And I probably would have gone with Scooble, but maybe it should have been closer than 26-4 in first place.
Yeah, I will say, I think Scooble, and it's really interesting. Did you see what Scott Boras, his agent, was saying yesterday?
Okay, Scott Boras was on something yesterday with all his wordplay.
All of his rhymes.
Like, dude is ridiculous. Yeah. So someone take the microphone away from him. But no, please tell me.
Scott Boras was talking about Tarik Scooble, and it's a crucial couple of months here for Scooble and the Tigers.
Get him out of here.
They got to figure out, are they going to commit to him long term, or are they going to trade him, or are they going to do what the Cubs did, like what they did with Wilson Contreras, and do neither and then get nothing out of him when he goes and signs somewhere else in the free agent
market?
Please
do that, Detroit, please.
That'd be great. But ultimately, they need to make a decision. I think they'd be stupid to not re-sign him.
You're looking for your face post-Yiggy.
You're looking,
you have him.
Yes, you have him. And according to Scott Boras, they want to build a Tarik Barrack at the Tigers ballpark. Now, what's funny is, Austin, you understand this. Look at the division. It's in a real gettable spot right now. And
which is also kind of
I'm sorry to say that about the Royals.
No, but it's just funny to see, because you also had three teams that were in playoff contention until the last week of the year.
You did, but you could feel like you could really get an upper hand.
Oh, yeah.
On the division.
Mm-hmm. Which is why I want to see the Royals be aggressive this offseason.
100%. It's there. Which that's the reason why it's like, man, you're kind of just waving the white flag if you don't. Paul Skenes, this is why I have faith in that he'll be able to continue it. And maybe not a Cy Young every year, but to a certain...
I mean, certainly top five.
Right? So he throws his four-seam fastball. We talk about arm care and things like that. There's so much technology out and so much in the arm care world to where if you can throw it and if you can protect your arm and things like that, you can get your arm ready to go. You can prevent or limit the potential injury percentage. And obviously, I'm talking Tommy John or something massive with your shoulder or elbow, right? Well, four-seam fastball is as pure of a pitch as you could throw. He throws it close to 40% of the time.
Whew.
That's a dramatic amount. Mm-hmm. We're looking at for four-seam fastball, 39.6% of his pitches are the four-seam fastball.
Okay.
This is why I think he's starting to understand how to have longevity in Major League Baseball. In year one, in his rookie year, he threw the curveball 13.8% of the time. This season, 4.7. You know what pitch he started to increase the amount? The changeup. The changeup. 5.4%, almost doubled to 11.9%. Little details like that. If that trend continues, these are the analytics that like pitchers are looking at, right? Mm-hmm. If the analytics continue and this trend continues, you are at least, you're never going to be a foolproof plan, but the potential for longevity and the potential to keep your arm healthy is greater because you're not having the whip on the tendon in your elbow, right? You're also with changeups, it's a lot of pronation. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of rolling over with the wrist. You still get the movement. And when you throw as hard as Paul Skenes does, the average miles per hour on his four seam fastball is 98.2. His average miles per hour on the changeup in 2025, 88.7. You're talking almost a 10 mile per hour difference with movement.
Changing speed, changing eye level.
Yes, that's all. And if you can command at the big league level, probably at college level, it's two. Mm-hmm. At the big league level, you'd like to have three.
Mm-hmm.
If he can, if
and
he
if
can
you're not
do,
dominant like him, four.
Yes. If you can command the four seamer, the changeup, and then some sort of, in his version, the sinker and the split finger, you are going to have the at least potential to have longevity in the league. Mm-hmm. It's where you start. It's the heavy slider throwers. It's the heavy curve guys that consistently get their arms hurt. And most of the time, once again, the name of the game right now on the mound is velocity, velocity, velocity. Run the meter red, man. And Paul Skenes does that. His velocity is actually down 0.6 miles per hour from his rookie year.
Is he injured?
No. But once again,
he's still throwing what, 98.6?
Well, he's throwing. So in 2024, he threw 98.8.
Ah.
His average changeup though was 87. This year, 98.2 for his four seamer. His sinker, 97.6. You want to talk about movement with some run on it? hello sinker, and then you can throw in your changeup in there with 88 miles an hour. You're talking about 10, 11 miles an hour of speed change consistently. And if you're able to locate and you're just a dominating presence on the mound like he is, you have a bright future.
We got to go to break. I got to sneak this in really quick, though. Your pick for AL MVP tonight.
I think it's going to be Aaron Judge. I want it to be Cal Raleigh. I really want it to be Cal. I just don't think, I think market size matters too much, and it pisses me off.
And Judge was that good with the bat again.
Yeah.
And that's like Raleigh wasn't.
And that's the thing, is I'm not trying to take away anything from Aaron Judge. Mm-hmm. It's in all honesty, I think Cal Raleigh was more valuable to the Mariners. So then by definition, yeah, he should be the MVP. I just think market size and Aaron Judge did enough this year once again to have his name known.
The biggest travesty is not Aaron Judge versus Cal Raleigh. Mm. It's the fact that the American League Gold Glover, Platinum Glover, and Silver Slugger at shortstop is not in the top three. Justice for Robert Andrew Witt Jr.
Okay.
Justice for Bobby.
Justice for Bobby.
Jose Ramirez belongs in fourth place.
Can I talk about the market size, though, again?
Well, it's the vibes.
It's the vibes.
Cleveland got hot.
It's the vibes and the market size.
Bobby carried that team. Him and Mikel, best left side of the infield in baseball. And because Cleveland
except
got
in
hot,
Chicago. That's bad. Mm. No, best. Mm. I was going to say best middle infield. Never mind.
I'm saying left side here. So we can work with that.
Okay. Would you agree with middle infielders?
For now.
Dansby and Nico?
Until the Royals trade for Brendan Donovan. Until the Royals trade for Brendan Donovan. All right, I've got off my soapbox. We'll talk some Husker hoops and some more college football in hour three.